Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And hey, welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. Marquise Munson taking you through this Monday morning. Good show so far, fellas. A lot of football. It feels good to talk football again and actually look forward to some football taking place. When Corey said, when we had him on earlier in the show, Corey Curtis from News 2, this will be the first time today the Titans put the pads on since the AFC Championship game. That just seems like forever ago.
It does.
How long 2020's been, the AFC title game feels like it was 4 years ago.
At least, man. Yeah, it is good to talk about football. And with the NFL, you feel like we're going to keep talking about it. I still feel weird talking about college football right now because we just don't know.
Yeah. I feel good about the NFL.
I feel good about the NFL.
I think it's going to happen.
It's going to be...
Now, how it gets affected throughout is going to be interesting to monitor.
Yes.
And how they handle that. But certainly feel great about it starting.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be... Yeah, I mean, it's... Shoot, man. 4 weeks from today, the Titans, and 3.5 weeks, the season opens.
Yeah.
What is that? That's Texans...
Texas Chiefs, isn't it?
Texans Chiefs.
Yeah.
Woo! Love that one.
Oh, that'd be... That's a good way to start the season right there. Got a text on the text line from Ben... Talking about the Titans, I don't expect the offense to make up for the increased points per game that the defense will allow. And even if they do, we will play from behind more, and that is not our style. That is an interesting point that Ben brings up there. The Titans are obviously, every team is better this way, but Titans playing with the lead, that's when they want to play. You can run the ball as much as you want to run the ball. Derrick Henry's your biggest weapon on offense. You get behind a couple touchdowns in the game, you got to start chucking it around the field. I think the Titans are better equipped to do that this year than they have been in a long time. But certainly you don't want to get away from your identity if you're the Titans, and that is running the ball with Derrick Henry and kind of setting up that play-action pass after that. So a good point, I think, brought up by Ben there and some valid concerns with the defense.
No, it's a good point, absolutely. You think about, to me, the ultimate team that plays from ahead and is – great playing from ahead and then does not want to fall behind is the Ravens.
Yes.
And we saw that in the playoffs. I will say with the Titans, and certainly you got that running game, you want to control a game. I mean, if you think about, though, going back, I mean, the Chargers and Bucks wins, the Chiefs win, the Colts win in Indy. Early they were down there. Those are three games where they had to come back to win. They got into a total shootout with the Saints and were back and forth in that game.
Yep.
So I think that this offense can still function that way if Tannehill plays like he did last year. But maybe that's the thing. The question is, how much of a drop are you looking at on defense potentially here with all the changes?
Got another text in on the text line. Says, hopefully the offense can drag us to a decent record. Not excited about the downgraded offseason. I think there's a lot of that from Titans fans where you look at what happened in the offseason. Now, I tend to believe, you know, getting Tannehill locked in long term and getting a deal done with Derrick Henry is a massive win in the offseason. But then you look at the other side. You've lost Logan Ryan. Jack Conklin is gone. You didn't do a whole lot to address the pass rushing situation, at least as of yet. And the way that Vic Beasley has gone so far has disaster written all over it, so you don't feel good about that. So I do think you look at this defense right now especially, there's no question in my mind, as it stands today, it's weaker than it was when the season ended, and that's got to be a big concern if you're a Titans fan.
Right, and I get the Logan Ryan thing, as you're not going to pay him that much. I think you could look at the Jarrell Casey thing and say, I understand getting out in front of that, but – do you have enough up front to really disrupt offenses? And do you have enough playmakers up there? The offseason, though, you talk about grading their offseason. I'm withholding judgment until Jadeveon Clowney signs with another team.
Right.
So if you
that's the thing with Casey, too, though. Like you clear up that cap space with Casey, and everybody thought, okay, well, here's a corresponding move.
Yes.
You and I were even on the air. We were talking about maybe Clowney was coming in the next few days. Like, we thought it could be soon. Obviously, it hasn't been, but I would still think Clowney to the Titans is pretty likely. I'm not going to say it's definitely going to happen, but I think it's pretty likely.
And if if that's the case, then I look at the whole offseason as a pretty good one, because I look, the locking up of Tannehill and Henry can't be overlooked. I know it's just guys you had on your team, but you've got guys who I think you've got good deals. I think they're team friendly, especially Henry's. And you've also got Henry a lot happier than if he were just playing on the tag this year. And the fact that you know you're running it back basically with those guys the next 2 years, I think that's good work. But the Vic Beasley thing is, that's the one where it was already when you signed him, and now we're still waiting for him to pass a physical and be on the field. And obviously we know all that happened before he even showed up. So that's where you really wonder, and then you wonder how much a negative impact the defense is going to absorb from all the different changes, and starting with Dean Pease leaving. You can't. And Kerry Combs, too. I mean, he was terrific DB coach. Those guys loved him. He's the DC at Ohio State now. You know, Anthony Midget comes in, and certainly familiar with Vrabel, and I was impressed, with him on the Zoom call last week. But it is a very different kind of vibe with him going from Combs to him. I mean, going from Combs to anybody is like a downgrade in intensity. That's just
the energy is there with that guy, man.
Yeah, but it's just a lot. Those are two big changes. Pease and Combs gone, and then the other things. You are counting on some guys to individually really step forward and show you some things that we haven't seen yet.
In terms of what expectations are for this Titans offense, you and I think both agree that the offense at this point into training camp, far ahead of the defense. That's not a huge surprise. Number one, you're not hitting each other all that much. So it's always kind of difficult to grade what a defense is doing when there's little to no contact involved. That's a large part of what defense is contact. I understand that. But I look at this offense, and I think we talked about it earlier in the show, top five in the league. That's my expectation for it. Should that be the expectation? Is that a fair bar to set for this group? Because I'll be honest with you, especially as this roster is currently constructed, and even to a certain degree, if they get Clowney, I think this offense is going to have to be a top five offense if you're going to compete with the Kansas Cities of the world, the Baltimores, even Houston, even though they've lost DeAndre Hopkins, they're still going to have a decent offense with Deshaun Watson at the helm. Your offense is going to have to be pretty good if you're the Titans to be competitive in the AFC.
Yeah, I think there's an obvious top two, which is the Chiefs and Ravens. Some people might argue on the Ravens thing, given what we saw in the playoff game, but I think that offense is frightening, and I don't think anyone's coming up with some brilliant week-after-week answer anytime soon. So then I think the Titans can compete for the next spot. I think the Saints are obviously loaded.
Sure.
Drew Brees is old, but he's got a lot of talent around him, and Taysom Hill. Now you bring in Jameis as a backup. But, no, I mean, that's just Michael Thomas alone.
Kamara. I mean, yeah, they're loaded.
The Cowboys are pretty loaded. They're right there.
Don't understand the love for the Colts. There's a lot of love going on for the Colts. Phillip Rivers just doesn't do it for me.
I love their offensive line. They've upgraded with skill. I think they did some good things in upgrading, skill. I think, like a guy like Paris Campbell, they bring in Michael Pittman to help with T.Y. Hilton. I love Jonathan Taylor. I think that's I like everything about that offense.
Except quarterback.
He's good. He'll be good. Is he better than Jacoby Brissett? It'd probably be an upgrade, but I can't buy it as this revolutionary move that's going to push them back to the top of the AFC. If Uncle Rico proves me wrong, then I'll admit it right here.
If Andrew Luck was still there, you feel really good about this Colts roster because they've got pretty much everything else. DeForest Buckner coming on defense,
of course they couldn't pay everybody either. Like, would they have gotten a Buckner?
Probably not.
With Luck's deal? Yeah, probably not. But yeah, still, you'll take that trade off.
Yes.
It's too bad. Honestly, it's too bad for the NFL and NFL fans that career had to end when it did. But I look at the Titans, and I don't see why they shouldn't be fifth if you even put the Saints and Cowboys ahead of them.
I agree. And look, this is a lot of it's going to be about the receivers staying healthy, because I'll admit, after you get past A.J. Brown, Corey Davis, Adam Humphries, there's a lot of question marks on that receiving core. I get that. So you're going to need, especially A.J. Brown, to stay healthy. Derrick Henry, obviously that goes without saying, he's got to stay healthy. That's a given. If Tannehill, Henry, and your top three receivers stay healthy, I feel pretty good about this group. Obviously, the offensive line, you want to remain healthy there too. You're going to have some injuries somewhere along the way. I feel okay about their depth on the offensive line. Not great. I feel okay about it. I just look at this offense and the continuation that they have going from last year to this year with the offseason that a lot of these NFL teams have had to deal with. Like, think about Brady coming into Tampa. You come into a completely different situation. You haven't had to learn a new playbook, new terminology in 20 years. You're going to have to do that. Now, it's Brady. He can do it. I think he will do it. But you got a lot of teams around the league, new quarterbacks coming in, new offensive coordinators coming in, lots of new pieces. The Titans don't have to deal with any of that. And I think if there's ever a year where that could be a huge advantage, I think it's this one.
Yeah, agree. Like, basically everything points to a terrific offensive year and probably as exciting, explosive an offense as the Titans have had in fill in the blank ever.
Yeah.
Since it's been the Tennessee Titans. And can the defense be solid? If so, I think you're going to outscore a lot of teams, even if you're not playing the kind of defense you want to play.
Ron from Fort Wayne, Indiana, texts in and says, I think we're in a good position having no scrimmages or preseason games. We still have our core offensive line, and I feel the best way to start this year's chemistry is to run the ball. That's what we do best, so I think we should jump on other teams who are still trying to figure things out and really get warmed up for the season. That goes back to what we were talking about there from Ron. They have an opportunity here to take the continuity that they have. Arthur Smith, I thought, especially towards the end of last year, he was calling it some heck of a game. Like, the creativity he showed with his play calling, he was a huge question mark for me heading into last year. I thought he did a fantastic job, especially when Tannehill took over, of the balance of calling plays, mixing it up, using the play action pass. I thought Arthur Smith was outstanding.
Oh, he was. I mean, that's one of the main reasons. You know, the Dean Pease thing is, you can't be overlooked. It's just a huge loss. The Arthur Smith coming back is big. I mean, he proved a lot, I think, to a lot of people last year, and probably going to be a head coach in a few years here. Maybe not a few. Certainly a guy who did great with the tight ends. And that's one of those, you know, the internal hire is certainly – it's a Belichick thing.
Yep.
It's an Urban Meyer thing. And so this is, you know, Vrabel believes in that, obviously, and that looks like a home run right now.
Got a text from Caleb, says, need to sign Jennings and or Hurd from San Francisco if they are cut from wide receiver depth. I don't expect either one of those guys to be cut, I wouldn't think. I mean, Jennings is a guy. Yeah, he's taking, what, sixth round? You watch that guy play on the field. He's the type of guy coaches are going to like.
Jennings would be awesome here.
Yes.
Because I like, we had Corey Curtis on. I do think it matters that you have a bigger-bodied receiver in the back end of the room. But, yeah, I agree. I don't think he'll be cut. But I do think that at receiver and at inside linebacker, we talk about off-season moves, I wouldn't be surprised if John Robinson looks at one or both of those spots to sign a veteran when someone gets cut. I think – probably receiver most likely, but even inside linebacker, I'm not quite sure about their depth there either.
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. We'll take your calls and your texts on the Titans. We'll continue that discussion next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode taking you through this Monday morning. Joe, we were talking to Corey Curtis earlier in the show from News 2, and trying to determine, like, what should the expectations for the Titans be this year? Because I saw this happen with the Predators. You get to the Cup Final in 2017, and immediately the next year, the expectation is Stanley Cup or bust, which I'm okay with. I thought that should have been the expectation that year. I look at this Titans team. You get to the AFC title game last year. You go 9-7 in the regular season, although I think that record is deceptive given what the quarterback situation was to begin the season and what it ended up being once Tannehill took over. But I also take into account what else is in the conference. You've got the Super Bowl champions in the conference with Kansas City. You've got what I think was already a good team in Baltimore that I think got a lot better over the offseason. I really like the Ravens. So I think it's possible this year the Titans could go on to win the division. They could be 11-5, 12-4, and come out and get bounced in the divisional round. Like I think that's certainly a possibility this year for the Titans. I would not view that as a failure. I think a lot of Titans fans would. So what should the expectations for this Titans team be this year in your mind?
Yeah, winning the division, which even though it doesn't mean what it would normally mean, I think that's important. I think that's an important step. I think this team should go 10-6 or 11-5 and win the AFC South. And I think if you do that, you've put yourself in position to be in the tournament. You will have a game at home, which, again, doesn't matter that much this year probably if you do it. In other years, it's huge to be able to have a home playoff game and a packed stadium. And the last time Tennessee Titans played a playoff game at home was after the 2008 season, I believe.
Yep.
So that's, to me, what it is. And then, of course, you get in the tournament. You want to go far. You want to win the Super Bowl. But I'm with you. Could they easily, like, lose to Baltimore in a rematch? Sure. Would that be, like, this awful failure? I mean, I guess if it's, like, 41-3 or something. I mean, yeah. We don't know how it looks. We don't know who's hurt or whatever. But to me, come out and be consistent to a point. Be consistent with that offense and win your 10 or 11 games and win the AFC South. That, to me, is a good season. Then see what happens in the tournament.
Got a text on the text line that says, I feel many other good teams have a better margin for error to still thrive if the virus hits them. Titans could get set back a little bit more. That's interesting to think about because, obviously, that's something you have to think about this year in the NFL. What happens if, you know, there's an outbreak on the Titans or any other team in the NFL and 12 guys can't play in a week or a position group can't play? Like, what happens to the Titans if the secondary catches COVID-19 and they can't play? Like, what do you do then?
Yeah, well, see, now there's an area where I think they would be well-equipped to handle it. You know, if you look at their twos in the secondary, yeah. You know, they got like a guy like Amani Hooker. They got Crookshank. They got Josh Kalu. They got Ty Smith. They've got some guys in the secondary where I think they could be okay without a huge drop-off. I mentioned middle linebacker last segment. We know about outside linebacker.
Yeah.
I think the defensive front seven's an area where the depth is not what you want. Offensive line, you know, obviously like quarterback, okay? You're way worse at two right now. All due respect to Logan Woodside, he's not Ryan Tannehill of a year ago.
No.
Ryan Tannehill is a guy who had thrown for 4,000 yards multiple times in the NFL as your backup.
He's not Marcus Mariota.
Right. Mariota was your start. Exactly. Your two, whoever your two was last year, way beyond what you have this year. So I don't know. The problem is that I think that's an interesting thought, like if they get hit with COVID. How many NFL teams feel great about their – I mean, that the league is not built for you to feel great about your depth at a lot of places with a salary cap and just the way the league is set up. But maybe in some spots if they got hit. That's another thing. It's like if you get a breakout, does that – I mean, I would assume like a room – position room, you know, might get hit in particular, right? Like these guys
That'd
are,
be tough.
You know, one – linebacker brings it in, and it's all your linebackers who get it. You know, like the offensive line, you know, the center has it. Now, what does that mean when you line up in practice? I mean, it's there are going to be situations like this in the NFL this year. And then, like, where does it go in terms of getting guys, finding guys on the street to play, and then still putting a game together? You know?
Yeah, and like the big question, like what happens, and I think you and I have discussed this, like what happens if you've got to cancel a couple of games and you end up with one team playing 16 games that's in a playoff race in the AFC, another team has played 14 games. Like what do you do
It's winning percentage.
Winning percentage, I guess, but like then you got to factor in strength. Like if I'm the Ravens and I've had to play against the Chiefs and the Texans and the Titans have played against, I don't know, the Browns and the whoever, Lions, that's a little different. Like, you'd have a legitimate beef there.
Yeah, right. Like, the division, you know, like maybe your winning percentage isn't as good, but your division record is better.
Right.
So, Yeah, I'd like to see a little bit of transparency from the NFL on that. I mean, I don't think anybody wants to talk about the idea of canceling games.
Right.
I think they're going to go to the ends of the earth to play the games, but it may not be possible every time.
Joe, we were talking in the break about the kicking situation for the Titans. Obviously, that was a disaster at times last year for the Titans, and we thought maybe at some point it could end up costing them games down the stretch, but they got into this groove like the last 5 or 6 weeks of the season where they really weren't kicking field goals. They were just scoring touchdowns all the time, so it never really reared its ugly head in a tough situation. How do we feel about the Titans' kicking situation heading into this season?
Greg Joseph looks really good right now. And they brought in Tucker McCann. Let me make sure I don't mess his name up. McCann.
Did a great job.
Rookie from Missouri as an undrafted free agent, which is good. Bring in some competition. And he had a good career at Missouri. Someone, gosh, who the heck was I talking to yesterday? Might have been Jimmy Wyatt. Yeah, it was Wyatt, you know, talking about McCann. I'd forgotten this. You know, they came to Vanderbilt, Missouri did last year, and he was terrible. He, like missed all three of his field goals, which is interesting because it's like you would assume, I'm sure somebody from the Titans was at that game. They go sure. they go to the Vanderbilt games to look at prospects. And so they still end up signing Tucker McCann. But he had a good career overall. Yesterday in particular, you know, so far in 2 days, they've kind of had this little competition. They move him back 5 yards each time, going all the way back to 53 yards. Joseph was 5 for 5 and was drilling them like down the middle. Boom, boom. McCann was 4 for 5, and he did hit the long one, but he was a shorter one. He pushed badly, almost shanked it. He hooked a couple others. He was very playing with the goalposts on his kicks.
Yeah.
So right now, Joseph looks a lot more solid. Yeah, it's just one day. And every day they're going to have something like this. You got to be able to see it. But I would say right now Joseph looks good. I mean, he only got one. He got one kick last year. He got a chip shot in that Kansas City game, and he hit it. He also had a really good year 2 years ago with Cleveland before he got beat out. So you feel decent about him, and it's good that they got him some competition right now.
Yeah, because look, there's going to come a time this year where that's going to win or lose you a game. I mean, the odds are in the NFL that's going to happen. I understand it didn't really happen down the stretch when Tannehill was the quarterback because that offense was so lethal that they were basically either punting or scoring touchdowns. There was really no in between. But there's going to come maybe a couple occasions this year where you're going to be a close game. It's going to be tight. You need your field goal kicker to make some clutch kicks. That didn't happen a lot for the Titans last year in that situation with Ryan Succop and the injury he was dealing with. That's going to be crucial this year in a league where the margin for error at times is really the difference in your field goal kicker sometimes.
Well, look, I mean, the Buffalo, Indianapolis, and then the Texans game with Tannehill at quarterback,
yeah.
You could look at all three of those games and blame at least a good chunk of those losses on kicking. So imagine what you're looking at the end of the year if those go a different way. So it's big. I mean, the fact that they made it through, did all they did with what they had, were an 8-for-18 performance, actually speaks well of everybody else. So, yeah, just imagine now if they can just have like a 70% kicking situation this year. Sounds pretty good on the bottom line.
It sure does. When we come back, we'll continue the Titans discussion with Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning. Talking Titans, and let's bring in our good friend Darren McFarland from Darren Donick and Chase. Darren, what's going on, my man?
Boy, Marquise can always give me the Monday coffee, man. I don't even need it. I don't need the liquid. Just the good music.
Just a little night train, Darren. I got you a little night train there.
Yeah, I got some Nissan Stadium and Bridgestone Arena memories from that.
And that's Munson's girlfriend. This is the album, right?
Yeah.
This is the album wants you to explore.
No, I did. I actually listened to it. I listened to for the first time, Darren, I listened to Appetite for Destruction in its entirety.
And what'd
you
think?
First time?
Well, no. Obviously, I've heard Welcome to the Jungle and all the main songs.
Paradise City.
I've heard the cliche, the ones that's on the radio all the time. But I never listened to the album, like, start – to finish in its entirety.
Pretty great. Right.
Pretty great. Right. Yeah. Pretty great. The Roses side, it starts off a little slow for me, like the first two songs, but it picks up later. It picks up.
Yeah, it's good stuff. By the way, Bridgestone Arena, if I didn't get a tip that they were going to be on the stage at 7 o'clock, I'm like, Axl Rose, Guns N' Roses? Yeah, right. And they're like, you better be in your seat at 7 o'clock. I'm like, come on, really? I was there at 7 o'clock. They were on the stage at 7 o'clock on the button.
That never happens.
Never.
Yeah,
it was about 10 o'clock.
In 1989, earlier, that did not happen.
Oh, no, it did not. They were lucky to come on stage in 1989. Forget being on time. Yeah, they played for over 3 hours.
Oh, man.
And they started at 7 on the button. Half of Bridgestone Arena, which was sold out for the show, was in their seats. And I'm sitting there laughing going, yeah, you didn't get the memo. I'm with you. If I didn't get the memo, I would have been there with you, too. I wouldn't have been in my seat, but it was a crazy show. But anyway, guys, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on with us. And, Darren, we've been talking a whole lot of Titans this morning. And I want to ask you specifically about Ryan Tannehill and what your expectations are for him. Because, look, I mean, you look at his numbers last year when he came in, they were insane. I mean, his efficiency was through the roof, yards per attempt, all these different things. They're probably not going to be as high this year, just statistically speaking, because that would probably mean a league MVP season if they are. Where do you think expectations for Ryan Tannehill should be, in your opinion?
Well, look, if he does that, if he duplicates last season when he replaced Marcus Mariota, John Robinson needs to walk around the facility with no shirt on and just point at himself, right, for about a month straight going, huh? Huh? Look at me, huh? Because, he got a visual. Yeah, what a visual, especially on a Monday morning. I mean, you know, a lot of people questioned giving Tannehill that type of money because of probably the question that you're asking. It's a little bit more than half of a season. Like, we've seen his body of work. Really? Like, you think he can do that again? That is the big question. But here's the deal. Now he is the guy, right? And so he is coming in as the starter, and they are putting this offense in place around him being under center. That wasn't the case this time last year. So familiarity and all the pieces around him, same deal with, we were talking about, you know, what is Adam Humphries going to bring to the table? This guy, and well, it's all the pieces that they've had in place. So there's no excuses of, well, man, they look a little bit rusty. I get it. This offseason's been weird. But I still think with all that being said, and if A.J. Brown can even come close, duplicate or even take a step forward with what he did last year. Jonnu Smith taking a step forward. Even with that being said, it's going to be extremely difficult for him to do what he had basically an historical regular season last year as a starter. But I don't think they're asking Ryan Tannehill to do that because of the way they've built this offense. I think they just need to keep pounding Derrick Henry, and Ryan Tannehill needs to stay healthy, which is vitally important, right? Because a lot of us are wondering, okay, if he goes down, now what? They've made their bet. They've said it's Logan Woodside and Cole McDonald. I guess that's the guys they're going with. At least that's what it feels like today. I don't think there's a veteran quarterback in the cards, a luxury that they had last year when they decided to pull the plug on Mariota. So I don't think you can expect him to do the same, but is anybody believe that he could do the same, but yet they still can't have the same results? I don't think he has to be exactly the same and them still not win a division and get where they need to be.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, expecting him to lead the league in NFL rating, I mean, he's one of two quarterbacks to have 70% completion and 9 yards an attempt ever. You know, it's him and Montana in 89, Guns N' Roses prime. Also, Joe Montana's prime. So, I mean, that's not realistic, but I'm with you, Darren. I mean, if he's really good – and he looks really good right now, the offense should be great. But obviously, the other side of the ball is where most of the concern is. So what is your concern level with that side of the ball, and I guess in particular pass rush right now?
Well, certainly that is got to be number one, right? And I don't know what's, you know, we haven't I guess Mike Vrabel asked this weekend? I didn't see the head drop. Was the Clowney question asked?
No, he's getting a break from the Clowney.
Okay,
but now
I was
that you mention it, maybe today's a good day.
I felt like he got a break this weekend. I didn't see him drop his head to the table and have about 20 seconds of awkward silence about the Clowney question.
We're taking it easy on him.
It's early. Ease into training camp, right? Ease into this stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, it could still happen. They need it to happen, obviously. They need to get to the quarterback. They need to do a better job of that. Obviously, they've lost some guys. And Dean Pease, that's probably 1 and 1A to me. I mean, pass rush. And how does Mike Vrabel handle being a head coach, defensive coordinator? I know he's got somebody that's going to help him when he's not available. But we also haven't seen that from him. So if we haven't seen that from him, it's still fair to ask, how is that going to work? It's not easy to pull off. Some coaches can do it. Some coaches have done it very well. Some coaches have not. We don't know if Mike Vrabel can handle the defensive duties and being the head coach. There's a lot already that comes with just being a head coach. They need the defense and the other side of the ball to be good again. Dean Pease was really good, and they're going to miss him. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be some cliff dive or anything, if that's what you're asking, Joe, and I don't think you are. I think when you look at the personnel, there's guys on that roster that can be better. Like Jeffrey Simmons should be better this year. Rashawn Evans, a guy they identified as a guy, and you both know talking to him, and you root for a guy like that. He's so much fun to talk to. He's a tremendous player and should take another step in his career. So there are guys that have more to give. Harold Landry, I think, has more to give. And so with that being said, if those guys have more to give, then there shouldn't be a fall-off with the defense.
Darren McFarland from Darren Donick and Chase on the line with us. And Darren,
by the way, did the Nashville SC game end yet? Do we have a final?
Yeah, we got a final. 0-0.
Okay. I don't know if it was still raining in Dallas or not.
I think it ended approximately 4 in the morning.
Oh, boy. I actually was watching it, and then I said, I got to go to bed.
I got to go to sleep. Sleep is valuable.
Yeah, that's some great passing and some good attempts there in the first 20 minutes, but I got to go to bed.
We were the same way. Sleep is vital when you wake up at 4:30 to do a morning show.
Yes.
So, Darren, I want to talk to you about Corey Davis a little bit. Obviously, this is a huge year for him. He's never going to get over those expectations of being the 5th overall draft pick. What do you think fair expectations should be for Corey Davis specifically this year in this offense?
What are fair expectations? I mean, I don't think anything's ever going to be fair with Corey Davis because of what you said at the beginning. And look, I'm just as guilty as anybody, but that's just how it works. It's not his fault that he was drafted 5th overall and the first number one receiver in the draft. It's not his fault. He got paid for it. He's been rewarded for that. But, you know, I just, in my mind, I just don't believe he's ever going to live up to that. I mean, there's no proof that the proverbial switch is going to turn on in year 4. I mean, there just is no proof of that. And right now, his best season is what, 65 catches? Last
Yep.
year, he had 43 catches. I mean, you look at his numbers last year, that's his third year. I mean, they've been trying to make him the number one. They've been trying to get him to be A.J. Brown. And, like, all of his numbers were, like, you know, 49th in this category, 87th in this category. I mean, it's just – I just think, unfortunately, this is what he is. If he was a third-round pick, it would be perfectly acceptable what he brings to the table, right? If he was a third- or fourth-round pick, but he wasn't. And so he's never going to get past that. And I just think this is who he is. He's about a 50-catch-a-year guy, and that's kind of what I expect from him, a 50 catches this season. He's a good blocker. He does other things to help his team, but that's not what you draft a guy 5th overall and the number one receiver in the draft for. You want him to be dynamic like A.J. Brown has been early on, and A.J. Brown has proven he is the number one. So what do I expect out of him? Exactly what we've seen the last 3 years. It's not his fault. It's just his fault that he was drafted that high, and that's the expectations that have been put on him and will always be put on him. He'll never be able to shed that, and I expect 50 catches out of him for about, I don't know, 600 yards.
So Darren, Vanderbilt's on the field today. Tennessee is on the field today. The SEC is practicing. The Paul Feinbaum show will have the, you know, first week. The SEC Network tonight will have the full SEC schedule. So it's almost – it's like this big celebration of SEC football with a lot of uncertainty still surrounding, you know, SEC football 6 weeks from now, what will actually happen. Do you feel any differently today than you did at the end of last week?
I feel differently right now than I did 10 minutes ago. So schedule release means there's going to be college football, right?
Isn't I guess that, so. That works? I guess so.
You release a schedule, a revised schedule, and that means there's going to be college football? Or well,
somebody tell the Big Ten.
You would think so. You would think it would mean something.
That didn't work in the Big Ten. Joe, I don't know. I'm like you guys. Do I think they're going to attempt it? Do I think they have done – they've approached this the right way? I don't understand why the Big Ten and Pac-12 decided to make that decision last week. Why? I mean, that's what I don't understand. Why? If you're talking about starting in late September, why? Why would you make that decision now? Just – haven't we learned stuff through all of this 5-plus months? Like, don't come out and say things like, we will do this or this will happen. No, you don't know that. So don't say it. So I think they're going to try. I think they're going to attempt to pull this off. I hope they're successful. But I don't know. I mean, a schedule release, I mean, I say that as a joke because it is kind of a joke, right? The Big Ten released their schedule, and 5 days later they cancel their season. So, yeah, they've released a schedule. Great. They're going to attempt to pull this off. Great. I guess what I've said throughout all this is the lines get blurred for me because I don't understand where we're supposed to. So let me get this straight. What is happening this Friday in this state?
High school football.
At least last time I checked, right? Did I miss the memo? Maybe something happened overnight. Did they cancel high school football?
No, it's going down.
Okay. I thought high school football is happening this Friday, correct?
That's correct.
So high school football is going to be played around the country, but yet they can't figure out how to make college football work? I mean, you see what I mean? Like, I don't understand. Like, how are they going to do that, but then yet you can't successfully pull off college football? How is high school football? And, oh, by the way, what if? And I'm just saying what if because I don't know. But what if the SEC and the ACC and the Big 12 actually do pull this off? Like, what if it happens? Like, what if they have a season and they have a successful season? What do you think is going to happen with the Big Ten and the Pac-12? What is the fallout from that?
That's a good question. People are angry now, and they will be more angry at that point.
Well, I mean, right? I mean, if high school football is being played around the country and some conferences are going to play college football, and it happens, and I'm not saying that they'll get through it, but if they do, just for the sake of this conversation, what is the fallout for those two conferences? I mean, it's got to be astronomical, right? It's got to be a huge fallout. Just forget what the effect that you – like recruiting and just like what will happen, the ripple effect for those conferences for – I mean, Joe, you know this. You covered it for how many years? I mean, what is the ripple effect for the Big Ten for the next 5 years if they don't play this year, which they're not, at least as of today, right now, and everybody else does?
Yeah, well, that spring season that they don't have planned out at all better happen in that
all
case.
All of a sudden, it's getting
and
planned.
They also better beg for everyone else to hold off and wait, have your playoff in June? Can you
Could
wait?
Could you wait on us a little bit? Yeah, should be interesting.
Good luck with that.
Darren McFarland from Darren Donick and Chase has been our guest here on Morning Drive. D-Mac, appreciate it as always, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
Gentlemen, have a great rest of your show. Thank you.
Appreciate you. Darren Donick and Chase coming up directly after us at 10 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game. We'll come back, react to a little bit of what Darren had to say there, also dive into the Preds a little bit as well. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's good-to-go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Welcome back in. Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson. That's another great bump song pick by me. Bring Him Out by T.I.
That was you?
Oh, yeah, man. I'm on a roll.
Nice.
Well, Joe, he...
There's a lot of hating going on in the middle, like the first part of this when we started doing this. Munson was not happy with me.
I wasn't.
I think that I've done a pretty good job.
Your picks
lately.
Were awful. Yeah. But Joe's been like, he's been picking some deep cuts. There's some good songs, but, you know, especially Hip Hop by Dead Prez. Like, look, I can't. I will never. Dead Prez Hip Hop is the great.
That's pretty good.
One of the greats.
I might have to start finding some Yacht Rock.
Well,
I haven't really gone to my Yacht Rock reserve.
Well, you requested a song earlier. First of all, you requested a song that I probably could not play on air just because of the lyrics of
There's no probably. Sometimes I forget about that.
Yes, sometimes. But then you also try to request a song from Black Eyed Peas. And see, that's automatically, I don't care if Fergie's in it. I don't care who's in it. It's automatically a no for me, dog.
I'm telling you that the 1990, I think 7 or 8 album, is actually really good.
Did you but just then, go Randy Jackson on us? It's I a did. No for me, dog.
Yeah, that is a definite, that is a definite no for me, dog. Anything Black Eyed Peas is awful.
I totally missed that. Listen, everything they did after that, I get it. I don't like it at all. It's terrible, but I swear, that album is actually good.
You know what? Here's a hot take here. I strongly believe that Black Eyed Peas is the hip-hop equivalent to Nickelback.
That's just, pretty. That's, hey, you want to hear another? That's pretty good. I don't think Nickelback's that bad.
Yeah,
I really don't.
Yeah.
Well, see, I also like.
Especially compared to some of the stuff we hear nowadays. Like, I had this tweet over the weekend. 98% of today's music sucks. It's awful. I've become the get off my lawn guy about music today.
I'm that guy too.
It's terrible. I listened to some top 40 music this weekend and even country music. It sucks. It's awful. I can't do it.
Yeah, me too. Like, I've got enough music. Between, you know, classic rock, going back to the Beatles, Motown, hip-hop of the 80s and 90s, the grunge, you know, all the alternative music. Like, I've got enough now. Radiohead, yeah. I'm good.
Like,
I
just defended Nickelback. It happened.
Yeah, see, that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, I just think Nickelback sounds like they suck, but I only know, like, 2 songs.
Your Photograph?
Yeah,
that song's awful.
Yeah, I mean, they're not. I don't think they're good. I'd say they're better than Creed.
And it's a very aggressive song. Like, look at this photograph. Like,
just holding it in
your
face.
Shove it in my face. Look at this photograph. No, thank you.
Yeah,
sir.
That was not in the days of the smartphone.
Can you ask me if I want to look at it first before you, like, you know, shove it in my face?
Yeah.
But Black Eyed Peas, Nickelback, they're pretty much the same.
No, that's a good comparison.
They're the same group.
But I'm glad that you got into Appetite for Destruction. That is one of my all-time favorite albums.
That was a good pick. I like it. I like the first 2 songs on the Rose portion of it was like, because I really don't like the 80s love ballads. Like, I'm not really
so
a
like Sweet Child of Mine.
Well, Sweet Child of Mine was amazing, but yeah. I mean, it was a lot better than the first 2 songs.
Isn't My Michelle the first song on the other side?
I think
that's one of my favorite songs of the album.
Really?
Yeah, that song is.
I felt like the placement was just awful because it's like you go from the Guns portion of it, which is just heavy in your face, and then like the next 2 songs are like a little bit slower, and then it goes to Sweet Child of Mine. If they would have like switched it and put like those 2 songs after Sweet Child of Mine, it probably would have been a lot better. It was just album placement.
You two breaking down these albums,
yeah.
Like how their places.
Like,
I don't know any of that stuff.
Hey, that is.
What's that Guns N' Roses song? Oh, yeah, I've heard that before. That's as deep as my music knowledge
goes. Placement is important. I'm telling you. Because like, if you have all the momentum going from the Guns portion of the album, and then the next 2 songs is just kind of like, And then it goes right after to Sweet Child of Mine. Then it's like, oh, I'm back again. I'm a little bit more upbeat. I think they could have just.
See, I've never been an album guy. Like, if you were to ask me what album Garth Brooks' songs came off of, or Travis Tritt, like, tell me the album this song is on, I have no clue. Couldn't tell you.
That's a young person thing. Because, yeah, like, I think of, like, oh, the White Album, you know, this one's better than this one or whatever. I mean, I think in terms of albums, but, yeah, it's less and less today. It's just, you just hear the song and.
I know that song.
Yeah.
That's how that goes.
So it was My Michelle and Think About You.
Yeah, that's not. Okay. Think About You is probably the weakest song in the whole album.
Yeah, but and the follow-up is Sweet Child of Mine is right after.
Right.
So it's like if they would have just started off with Sweet Child of Mine, it would have been amazing. It would have been good. Because it went from Paradise City to My Michelle, and it's just like, it's just very 2 different tempos.
But right Rocket now. Queen, the capper,
yes,
one of the all-time
just
greats.
Throwing versatility in there. It's okay.
I like it. I like it. It was a good album. It was a good album. It wasn't my request for her was Stankonia, Stankonia.
Does she like that?
Yeah, she loves Stankonia. Okay. But it's funny because Stankonia and Appetite for Destruction is pretty much I'm not going to say they're the same album. It's not Ben Simmons and John Morant, so hopefully that guy doesn't tweet me. But
that really bothered you, didn't it?
It did. It got on my nerves. Okay. But it's like, you know the main songs on the album, but you don't know, like, what else is on the album. And that's kind of how I look at Stankonia. Like, you know B.O.B., you know Miss Jackson, and you know So Fresh, So Clean. And then there's other songs on there.
A lot of great songs.
There's a lot of songs that are still, like, really good on there.
Right.
Got a song with Erykah Badu on there that is absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
So it's like one of those albums. And I think Appetite for Destruction is the same thing. Like, yeah, I know Paradise City. You know, I know Welcome to the Jungle. And I know Sweet Child of Mine. But, like, I didn't know the rest of it. So there you go.
Albums are good.
Album breakdown.
All right.
Album breakdown of the day, brought to you by no one.
Yeah.
Brought to you by,
nobody. Joe, I do want to get into the Preds very quickly. We've got Jeff Zilgert from USA Today coming on to talk NBA playoffs with us in the next segment. But I watched the Predators and trying to evaluate some of what the move should be in the offseason. We talked about Kyle Turris last week. We talked about not bringing back Granlund and Smith. I think all of those are fairly likely. I would also not be surprised this year to see a guy like Cali Yarncroke get moved this offseason. You're looking at a guy that, to me, right now, he's not bringing a whole lot to the table. I mean, he's a guy you signed. His contract is very friendly. He's getting paid $2 million a year. But Cali Yarncroke, to me, right now, with this group, is kind of just there. I mean, he's a versatile guy that you can put, I guess, anywhere you want to. But when he's in a top six role, not really scoring all that much. He's not doing anything on the power play. He had 15 goals this year, which is nice. But he's a guy, to me, that if you're looking to move, I think there would be some suitors out there for him. And to me, I'm ready to put some young talent in. I would put Trennan in the lineup over Yarncroke at this point. So that's kind of a move that we haven't talked about that I think could be likely for David Poile and the Predators.
Yeah, of course, people are going to say, well, remember when you left James Neal unprotected?
Yeah, well.
But, it's super versatile, super cheap, but I think that you could probably get more reward with a young guy in that spot. I think that's, an example of something that's not a huge change but could maybe make a difference. Our friend Alex Doherty, I meant to tweet at him because I don't know where he got this from, but he tweeted something out that he read somewhere about a source claiming that Poile had offered up Ryan Johansson for Ryan Getzlaf to the Ducks.
Yeah, I don't believe
that. Did you see that one?
I saw it. I don't believe it.
I got to know where that's from, including Johansson, one pick. Yeah, that doesn't make sense. Why would that be good?
Ryan Getzlaf is 35 years old. He just had 42 points this year. To me, if you're trading Johansson for Getzlaf, you're not getting any better doing that. Getzlaf when he's 27? Okay. I can listen to that. But
now,
that just doesn't make any sense.
Ryan Johansson as a possible trade chip? I'm not
going to discount that. No, that could happen.
I mean, I think you can make a much stronger case to not do that right now. But that's one of those things you could do. But, yeah, I mean, Yarncroke is that makes sense. That's a guy who – he does. He can do. You can put him anywhere and feel fine with it. And there is value in that. I mean,
there
you can
is.
Put him on the penalty kill.
I think people have kind of overblown. That's the thing. People have kind of overblown
what versatility means.
What versatility? Like, yeah, you could put him in the top six, but is he going to be productive in the top six? Because if he's not going to be productive in the top six, can you really put him there? I would argue no. So, yeah, I guess from a hair, my eyeballs are telling me Cali Yarncroke is in the top six. Yeah, you can put him there. How productive is he going to be? To me, I think it's just time to move on. That's my thoughts. I could be totally wrong. That's just my thoughts on the matter.
By the time we get to, like, September, we'll have half the roster out of here.
Yeah. You know? We'll just keep going. We'll keep digging away.
Pick a new guy to pick on every other day or so.
That's right. When we come back, Jeff Zilgert from USA Today will join us. We'll dive into the NBA playoffs and the tough loss for the Memphis Grizzlies over the weekend. That's next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Here on ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.